The bedroom door opened again, but again you pulled it shut, and you tried to make a joke of it. "Trust me," you said. "She won't move. She'll just lay there." And what was his response? What was it? What was his reasoning for you to step aside and let him in that room? Do you remember? Because I do. It was the night shift. He told you he was working the night shift and had to leave in a few minutes. A few minutes. That's all he needed with her. So just relax and step aside. And that's all it took for you to let him open the door.
God.
Pathetic. I couldn't believe it. And your friend couldn't believe it either. Because when he grabbed the doorknob again, he didn't rush right in. He waited for you to protest. In that brief moment, the moment you said nothing, I fell on my knees, sick, covering my mouth with both hands. I stumbled toward the closet, tears blurring the light from the hall. And when I collapsed into the closet, a pile of jackets on the floor caught me. When the bedroom door opened, I pulled the closet door shut, and I shut my eyes tight. Blood pounded in my ears. I rocked back and forth, beating my forehead into the pile of jackets. But with the bass pumping throughout the house, no one heard me.
Just relax. Those words, he said it before. It's what he always says to the people he's taking advantage of, girlfriends, guys, whoever. It's Bryce. It has to be. Bryce Walker was in that room.
And with the bass thumping, no one heard him walking across the room. Walking across the room. Getting on the bed. The bed spring screaming under his weight. No one heard a thing. And I could have stopped it. If I could have talked. If I could have seen. If I could have thought about anything, I would have opened those doors and stopped it. But I didn't. And it doesn't matter what my excuse was. That my mind was in a meltdown is no excuse. I have no excuse. I could have stopped it. End of story. But to stop it, I felt like I'd have to stop the entire world from spinning. Like things had been out of control for so long that whatever I did hardly mattered anymore. And I couldn't stand all the emotions anymore. I wanted the world to stop. To end.
For Hannah, the world did end. But for Jessica, it didn't. It went on. And then Hannah hit her with these tapes.
I don't know how many songs went by with my face buried in those jackets. The beats kept sliding from one song into another. After a while, my throat felt so scratched, so raw and burning. Had I been screaming? With my knees on the floor, I felt vibrations whenever anyone walked down the hall. And when footsteps fell within the room, several songs after he entered the room, I pressed my back against the closet wall, waiting. Waiting for the closet doors to be torn open, to be yanked out of my hiding place. And then, what would he do to me then?
Tony's car pulls over. The front tire scrapes the curb. I don't know how we got here, but the house is right outside my window now. The same front door where I entered the party. The same front porch where I left. And to the left of the porch, a window. Behind that window, a bedroom and a closet with accordion doors where Hannah, on the night I kissed her, disappeared.
But light from the hallway seeped into the room, into the closet, and his footsteps walked away. It was over. After all, he couldn't be late for work, could he? So what happened next? Well, I ran out of the room and straight down the hall, and that's where I saw you, sitting in a room all by yourself. The person this whole tape revolves around. Justin Foley.
My stomach lurches and I fling open the car door.
Sitting on the edge of a bed with the lights turned off, there you were. Sitting there, staring at nothing. While I stood in the hallway, frozen, staring at you. We'd come a long way, Justin. From the first time I watched you slip on Cat's lawn, to my first kiss at the bottom of the slide, to now. First, you started a chain of events that ruined my life. Now, you are working on hers.
Outside that very same house, I throw up. I keep my body hunched over, my head hanging over the gutter.
Eventually, you turn my way. The color in your face, gone. Your expression, blank. and your eyes look so exhausted. Or was it pain I saw there?
Stay there as long as you want, Tony says. Don't worry, I think. I won't puke in your car.
Justin, baby, I'm not blaming you entirely. We're in this one together. We both could have stopped it. Either one of us. We could have saved her. And I'm admitting this to you. To all of you. That girl had two chances. And both of us let her down.
The breeze feels good on my face, cooling the sweat on my forehead and neck.
So why is this tape about Justin? What about the other guy? Isn't what he did worse? Yes. Absolutely yes. But the tapes need to be passed on. And if I sent them to him, they would stop. Think about it. He raped a girl. I would leave town in a second if he knew. Well, if he knew that we knew.
I press pause. Still hunched over, I breathe in as fully as possible, then hold it. And release. Breathe. Then hold. Release. I sit upright in the seat, keeping the door open just in case. Why you? I ask. Why do you have these tapes? What did you do? A car drives by and we both watch it turn left 2 blocks away. It's another minute before Tony answers. Nothing, he says, and that's the truth. For the first time since approaching me at Rosie's, Tony addresses me eye to eye. In his eyes, catching the light from a lamppost half a block away, I see tears. Finish this tape, Clay, and I'll explain everything. I don't answer. Finish it. You're almost done, he says. I press play.
So, what do you think of him now, Justin? Do you hate him? Your friend that raped her, is he still your friend? Yes, but why? It must be denial. It has to be. Sure, he's always had a temper. Sure, he goes through girls like used underwear, but he's always been a good friend to you. And the more you hang out with him, the more he seems like the same old guy from before, right? And if he acts like the same guy, then he couldn't possibly have done anything wrong. Which means that you didn't do anything wrong either. Great. That's great news, Justin. Because if he didn't do anything wrong and you didn't do anything wrong, then I didn't do anything wrong. And you have no idea how much I wish I didn't ruin that girl's life. But I did. At the very least, I helped. And so did you. No, you're right. You didn't rape her. And I didn't rape her. He did. But you and I, we let it happen. It's our fault.
I press stop. Full story, I say. What happened? I pull the sixth tape from my pocket and swap it with the one inside the Walkman. Cassette 6, Side A. Tony takes his keys out of the ignition, something to hold on to while he talks. I've been trying to figure out how to say this the whole time we've been driving. The whole time we've been sitting here. Even when you were puking your guts out. You noticed I didn't puke in your car. I did. He smiles, looking down at his keys. Thanks, I appreciate that. I close the car door. My stomach is settling. She came over to my house, Tony says. Hannah. And that was my chance. For what? Clay, the signs were all there, he says. I had my chance too, I tell him. I take off the headphones and hang them on my knee. At the party. She was freaking out when we kissed, and I didn't know why. That was my chance. Inside the car, it's dark and quiet. With the windows rolled up, the outside world seems deep asleep. We're all to blame, he says, at least a little. So she came over to your house, I say, with her bike, the one she always rode to school. The blue one, I say. Let me guess, you were working on your car. He laughs. Who would have thought, right? But she never came over to my house before, so I was a little surprised. You know, we were friendly at school, so I didn't think too much of it. What was weird, though, was why she came over. Why? He looks out the side window, and his chest fills with air. She came over to give me her bike. The words sit there, undisturbed, for an uncomfortably long time. She wanted me to have it, he says. She was done with it. When I asked for a reason, she just shrugged. She didn't have one. But it was a sign, and I missed it. I summarize a bullet point from the handout at school. Giving away possessions. Tony nods. She said I was the only one she could think of who might need it. I drive the oldest car at school, she said, and she thought if it ever broke down, I might need a backup. But this baby never breaks down, I say. This thing always breaks down, he says. I'm just always around to fix it. So I told her that I couldn't take her bike, not without giving her something in return. What did you give her? I'll never forget this, he says, and he turns to look at me. Her eyes, Clay. They never looked away. She just kept looking straight into my eyes and started crying. She just stared at me and tears began streaming down her face. He wipes away tears from his own eyes and then wipes a hand across his upper lip. I should have done something. The signs were all there, all over, for anyone willing to notice. What did she ask for? She asked me how I made my tapes, the ones I play in my car. He leans his head back and takes a deep breath. So I told her about my dad's old tape recorder. He pauses. Then she asked if I had anything to record voices. God. Like a handheld recorder or something. Something you didn't have to plug in but could walk around with. And I didn't ask why. I told her to wait right there and I'd get one. And you gave it to her? He turns to me, his face hard. I didn't know what she was going to do with it, Clay. Wait, I'm not accusing you, Tony. But she didn't say anything about why she wanted it. If I had asked, do you think she would have told me? No. By the time she went to Tony's house, her mind was made up. If she wanted someone to stop her, to rescue her from herself, I was there, at the party, and she knew it. I shake my head. She wouldn't have told you. A few days later, he says, when I get home from school, there's a package sitting on my porch. I take it up to my room and start listening to the tapes. But it doesn't make any sense. Did she leave you a note or anything? No, just the tapes. But it didn't make any sense because Hannah and I have third period together and she was at school that day. What? So when I got home and started listening to the tapes, I went through them so fast. Fast forwarding to find out if I was on them. But I wasn't. And that's when I knew she'd given me the second set of tapes. So I looked her up and called her house, but no one answered. So I called her parents' door. I asked if Hannah was there, and they asked if everything was all right because I'm sure I sounded crazy. What did you say? I told them that something was wrong and they needed to find her. But I couldn't make myself tell them why. He takes in a thin, jagged breath of air. And the next day at school, she wasn't there. I wanted to tell him I'm sorry. That I can't imagine what that must have been like. But then I think of tomorrow, at school, and I realize I'll find out soon enough. Seeing the other people on the tapes for the first time. I went home early that day, he says, pretending I was sick. And I've got to admit it took me a few days to pull myself together. But when I returned, Justin Foley looked like hell. Then Alex. And I thought, okay, most of these people deserve it. So I'm going to do what she asked and make sure you all hear what she has to say. But how are you keeping track? I ask. How did you know I had the tapes? You were easy, he says. You stole my Walkman, Clay. We both laugh, and it feels good. A release. Like laughing at a funeral, maybe inappropriate, but definitely needed. But everyone else, they were a little trickier, he says. I'd run to my car after the last bell and drive as close to the front lawn of the school as possible. When I saw whoever was next, a couple days after I knew the last person had heard the tapes, I'd call out his name and wave him over, or her. I'd wave her over. And then you just ask if they had the tapes? No, they would have denied it, right? So I hold up a tape when they got close and tell them to get in because I had a song I wanted them to hear. Every time, based on their reaction, I knew. And then you play one of her tapes? No. If they didn't run away, I'd have to do something, so I'd play them a song, He says, any song. They would sit there, where you are, wondering why in the hell I was playing them this song. But if I was right, their eyes would glaze over, like they were a million miles away. So why you? I ask. Why'd she give the tapes to you? I don't know. He says, the only thing I can think of is because I gave her the recorder. She thought I had a stake in it and would play along. You're not on them, but you're still apart. He faces the windshield and grips the steering wheel. I've got to go. I didn't mean anything by that, I say. Honest. I know, but it's late. My dad's going to start wondering if I broke down somewhere. What? You don't want him messing under your hood again. I grab the door handle and then, remembering, let go and pull out my phone. I need you to do something. Can you say hello to my mom? Sure. I scroll through the list of names, hit send, and she picks up right away. Clay? Hey, Mom. Clay, where are you? She sounds hurt. I told you I might be out late. I know, you did. I was just hoping to hear from you by now. I'm sorry, but I'm going to need a little longer. I may need to stay at Tony's tonight. Right on cue.
Hello, Mrs. Jensen.
She asks if I've been drinking. Mom, no, I swear. Okay, well, this is for his history project, right? I flinch. She wants to believe my excuse is so bad. Every time I lie, she wants to believe me so much. I trust you, Clay. I tell her I'll be home before school to get my stuff. Then we hang up.
Where are you going to stay? Tony asks.
I don't know. I'll probably go home, but I don't want her to worry if I don't. He turns the key, the engine starts, and he flips on the headlights.
Do you want me to take you somewhere?
I grab the door handle and nod toward the house. This is where I'm at in the tapes, I say. But thanks. His eyes stare straight ahead. Honestly, thank you, I say. And when I say it, I mean it for more than just the ride. For everything. For how he reacted when I broke down and cried. For trying to make me laugh on the most horrible night of my life. It feels good knowing someone understands what I'm listening to. What I'm going through. Somehow, it makes it not as scary to keep listening. I get out of the car and shut the door. His car pulls away. I press play.
Back to the party, everyone. But don't get too comfy, we'll be leaving in just a minute.
Half a block away, Tony's Mustang stops at an intersection, takes a left, and drives away.
If time was a string connecting all your stories, that party would be the point where everything knots up. And that knot keeps growing and growing, getting more and more tangled, dragging the rest of your stories into it. When Justin and I finally broke that awful, painful stare, I wandered down the hall and back into the party. Staggered in, really. But not from the alcohol. From everything else.
I sit on the curb, a few feet from where I vomited out of Tony's car. If whoever lives here, because I have no idea whose party it was, wants to come out and ask me to leave, I welcome it. Please, do.
I grabbed for the piano in the living room, then the piano bench, and I sat. I wanted to leave, but where would I go? I couldn't go home. Not yet. And wherever I went, how would I get there? I was too weak to walk. At least I thought I was too weak. But in truth, I was too weak to try. The only thing I knew for certain was that I wanted to get out of there and not think about anything or anyone anymore. Then a hand touched my shoulder. A gentle squeeze. It was Jenny Kurtz.
The cheerleader from the student body office.
Jenny, this one's for you.
I dropped my head down to my knees.
Jenny asked if I needed a ride home, and I almost laughed. Was it so obvious? Did I look that terrible? So I looped my arm in hers and she helped me up, which felt good, letting someone help me. We walked out the front door, through a crowd either passed out on the porch or smoking in the yard.
Somewhere, at that moment, I was walking from block to block trying to figure out why I'd left that party. Trying to understand what had just happened between me and Hannah.
The sidewalk was damp. My feet, numb and heavy, shuffled across the pavement. I listened to the sound of every pebble and leaf that I stepped on. I wanted to hear them all. To block out the music and the voices behind me.
While blocks away, I could still hear that music. Distant, muffled. Like I couldn't get far enough away. And I can still remember every song that played.
Jenny, you didn't say a thing. You didn't ask me any questions. And I was so grateful. Maybe you've had things happen or seen things happen at parties that you just couldn't discuss. Not right away, at least. Which is sort of fitting because I haven't discussed any of this until now. Well, no. I tried. I tried once, but he didn't want to hear it.
Is that the 12th story? The 13th? Or something else entirely? Is it one of the names written on her paper that she won't tell us about?
So, Jenny, you led me to your car, and even though my thoughts were somewhere else, my eyes focused on nothing, I felt your touch. You held my arm with such tenderness as you lowered me into the passenger seat. You buckled me in, got in your seat, then we left. What happened next, I'm not entirely sure. I wasn't paying attention because in your car, I felt secure. The air inside was warm and comforting. The wiper blades on a slow speed gently pulled me out of my thoughts and into the car, into reality. The rain wasn't heavy, but it blurred the windshield just enough to keep everything dreamlike. And I needed that. It kept my world from becoming too real, too fast. And then, it hit. There's nothing like an accident to bring the world crashing back.
An accident? Another one? Two in one night? How come I never heard about this one?
The front wheel on my side slammed into and jumped the curb. A wooden post smacked into your front bumper and snapped back like a toothpick.
God, no.
A stop sign fell backward in front of your headlights. It caught under your car and you screamed and slammed on the brakes. In the side mirror, I watched sparks fly onto the road as we slid to a stop. Okay. Now I'm awake. We sat for a moment, staring through the windshield. No words, not a glance between us. The wipers smeared the rain from side to side, and my hand stayed gripped to my seatbelt, thankful we only hit a sign.
The accident with the old man. And the guy from school. Did Hannah know? Did she know Jenny caused it?
Your door opened, and I watched you walk to the front of your car, then crouch between the headlights for a closer look. You ran a hand over the dent and let your head droop forward. I couldn't tell if you were pissed, or were you crying? Maybe you were laughing at how horrible the night was turning out.
I know where to go. I don't need the map. I know exactly where the next star is, so I stand up to start walking.
The dent wasn't bad. I mean, it wasn't good, but you had to feel some relief. It could have been worse. It could have been much, much worse. For example, you could have hit something else.
She knows.
Something alive. Whatever your initial thoughts, you stood up with a blank expression, just standing there, staring at the dent, shaking your head. Then you caught my eye. And I'm sure I saw a frown, even if it lasted only a split second. But that frown turned into a smile, followed by a shrug. And what were the first words you said when you got back into the car? Well, that sucks. Then you put your key in the ignition and I stopped you. I couldn't let you drive away.
At the intersection where Tony turned left, I take a right. It's still two blocks away, but I know it's there. The stop sign.
You shut your eyes and said, Hannah, I'm not drunk. Well, I didn't accuse you of being drunk, Jenny, but I was wondering why the hell you couldn't keep your car on the road. It's raining, you said. And yes, true, it was. Barely. I told you to park the car. You told me to be reasonable. We both lived close by, and you'd stick to the residential streets as if that made it any better.
I see it. A metal pole holding up a stop sign, its reflective letters visible even this far away. But on the night of the accident, it was a different sign. The letters weren't reflective, and the sign had been fastened to a wooden post.
Hannah, don't worry, you said. Then you left. Nobody obeys stop signs anyway. They just roll on through. So now, because there isn't one there, it's legal. See? People will thank me. Again, I told you to park the car. We'd get a ride home from someone at the party. I'd pick you up first thing in the morning and drive you to your car. But you tried again. Hannah, listen. Park it, I said. Please. And then you told me to get out. But I wouldn't. I tried reasoning with you. You were lucky it was only a sign. Imagine what could happen if I let you drive us all the way home. But again, get out. I sat for a long time with my eyes shut, listening to the rain and the wipers. Hannah, get out. So finally I did. I opened the car door and stepped out, but I didn't shut it. I looked back at you, and you stared through your windshield, through the wipers, gripping the wheel.
Still a block away, but the only thing I can focus on is the stop sign straight ahead.
I asked if I could use your phone. I saw it sitting there right below the stereo. Why? You asked. I'm not sure why I told you the truth. I should have lied. We need to at least tell someone about the sign, I said. You kept your eyes straight ahead. They'll trace it. They can trace phone calls, Hannah. Then you started up the car and told me to shut the door. I didn't. So you reversed the car and I jumped back to keep the door from knocking me over. You didn't care that the metal sign was crushing, grating the underside of your car. When you cleared it, the sign laid at my feet, warped and streaked with silver scratches. You revved the engine and I took the hint, stepping back onto the curb. Then you peeled away, causing the door to slam shut, picking up speed the further you got, and you got away. In fact, you got away with much more than knocking down a sign, Jenny. And once again, I could have stopped it. Somehow.
We all could have stopped it. We all could have stopped something. The rumors. The rape. You.
There must have been something I could have said. At the very least, I could have taken your keys. Or, at the very, very least, I could have reached in and stolen your phone to call the police. Actually, that's the only thing that would have mattered. Because you found your way home in one piece, Jenny. But that wasn't the problem. The sign was knocked down. And that was the problem. B6 on your map. 2 blocks from the party, there's a stop sign. But on that night, for part of the night, there wasn't. And it was raining. And someone was trying to deliver his pizzas on time. And someone else, headed in the opposite direction, was turning.
The old man.
There was no stop sign on that corner. Not on that night. And one of them, one of the drivers, died.
No one knew who caused it. Not us. Not the police. But Jenny knew. And Hannah. And maybe Jenny's parents. Because someone fixed her bumper real fast.
I never knew the guy in that car. He was a senior. And when I saw his picture in the newspaper, I didn't recognize him. Just one of the many faces at school I never got to know, and never would. I didn't go to his funeral either. Yes, maybe I should have, but I didn't. I couldn't. And now I'm sure it's obvious why.
She didn't know. Not about the man in the other car. She didn't know it was the man from her house. Her old house. And I'm glad. Earlier, she watched him pull out of his garage. She watched him drive away without noticing her.
But some of you were there. At his funeral.
Driving to return a toothbrush. That's what his wife told me as we waited on her couch for the police to bring him home. He was driving to the other end of town to return their granddaughter's toothbrush. They'd been keeping an eye on her while her parents were on vacation, and she left it behind, by accident. The girl's parents said there was no need to drive across town just for that. They had plenty of extras. But that's just what he does, his wife told me. That's the kind of person he is. And then the police came.
For those of you who did go, let me describe what school was like on the day of his funeral. In a word, it was quiet. About a quarter of the school took the morning off, mostly seniors, of course. But for those of us who did go to school, The teachers let us know that if we simply forgot to bring a note from home, they wouldn't mark us absent if we wanted to attend the funeral. Mr. Porter said funerals can be a part of the healing process, but I doubted that very much. Not for me, because on that corner, there wasn't a stop sign that night. Someone had knocked it over, and someone else, yours truly, could have stopped it.
Two officers helped her husband inside, his body trembling. His wife got up and walked over to him. She wrapped him in her arms, and they cried. When I left, closing the door behind me, the last thing I saw was the two of them standing in the middle of the living room, holding each other.
On the day of the funeral, so those of you who attended wouldn't miss any work, the rest of us did nothing. In every class, the teachers gave us free time. Free to write, free to read, free to think. And what did I do? For the first time, I thought about my own funeral. More and more, in very general terms, I'd been thinking about my own death. Just the fact of dying. But on that day, with all of you at a funeral, I began thinking of my own.
I reached the stop sign. With the tips of my fingers, I reached forward and touched the cold metal pole.
I could picture life, school and everything else continuing on without me. But I could not picture my funeral. Not at all. Mostly because I couldn't imagine who would attend or what they would say. I have, no idea what you think of me.
I don't know what people think of you either, Hannah. When we found out, and since your parents didn't have a funeral in this town, no one said much about it at all. I mean, it was there. We felt it. Your empty desk, the fact that you would not be coming back. But no one knew where to begin. No one knew how to start that conversation.
It's now been a couple of weeks since the party. So far, Jenny, you've done a great job of hiding from me. I suppose that's understandable. You'd like to forget what we did. What happened with your car and the stop sign. The repercussions. But you never will.
Maybe you didn't know what people thought of you because they themselves didn't know what they thought of you. Maybe you didn't give us enough to go on, Hannah. If not for that party, I never would have met the real you. But for some reason, and I am extremely grateful, you gave me that chance. However brief it was, you gave me a chance. And I liked the Hannah I met that night. Maybe I could have even loved her. But you decided not to let that happen, Hannah. It was you who decided.
I, on the other hand, only have to think about it for one more day.
I turn away from the stop sign and walk away.
If I had known two cars were going to crash on that corner, I would have run back to the party and called the cops immediately. But I never imagined that would happen. Never. So instead, I walked. But not back to the party. My mind was racing all over the place. I couldn't think straight. I couldn't walk straight.
I want to look back. To look over my shoulder and see the stop sign with huge reflective letters, pleading with Hannah, stop. But I keep facing forward, refusing to see it as more than it is. It's a sign. A stop sign on a street corner. Nothing more.
I turned corner after corner with no idea where I was going.
We walked those streets together, Hannah. Different routes, but at the same time. On the same night, we walked the streets to get away. Me from you, and you from the party. But not just from the party, from yourself. And then I heard tires squeal, and I turned, and I watched two cars collide.
Eventually I made it to a gas station, C7 on your map, and I used a payphone to call the police. As it rang, I found myself hugging the receiver, part of me hoping that no one would answer. I wanted to wait. I wanted the phone to just keep ringing. I wanted life to stay right there, on pause.
I can't follow her map anymore. I am not going to the gas station.
When someone finally did answer, I sucked in the tears that wet my lips and told them that on the corner of Tanglewood and South. But she cut me off. She told me to calm down, and that's when I realized how hard I had been crying. How much I was struggling to catch one good breath.
I crossed the street and moved further away from the party house. Over the past few weeks, I've walked out of my way so many times to avoid that house. To avoid the reminder, the pain, of my one night with Hannah Baker. I have no desire to see it twice in one night.
She told me the cops had already been called and were on their way.
I swing my backpack in front of me and pull out the map.
I was shocked. I couldn't believe you actually called the police, Jenny.
I unfold the map to give it one last look.
But I shouldn't have been shocked, because as it turns out, you didn't call them.
Then I crumple it up, crushing the map into a ball the size of my fist.
At school the next day, when everyone replayed the events of what happened the previous night, that's when I found out who had called, and it wasn't to report a fallen sign.
I stuff the map deep into a bush and walk away.
It was to report an accident. An accident caused by a fallen sign. An accident I was never aware of until then. But that night after hanging up the phone, I wandered the streets some more. Because I had to stop crying. Before I went home, I needed to calm down. If my parents caught me sneaking back in with tears in my eyes, they'd ask way too many questions. Unanswerable questions.
That's what I'm doing now. Staying away. I wasn't crying the night of the party, but I can barely hold it back now. And I can't go home.
So I walked without thinking about which roads to take. And it felt good. The cold, the mist. That's what the rain had turned into by then. A light mist. And I walked for hours, imagining the mist growing thick and swallowing me whole. The thought of disappearing like that, so simply, made me so happy. But that, as you know, never happened.
I press stop. I pop open the Walkman to flip the tape. I'm almost at the end. God, I let out a quivering breath and close my eyes. The end. Cassette 6, side B. I press play.
Just two more to go. Don't give up on me now. I'm sorry. I guess that's an odd thing to say. Because isn't that what I'm doing? Giving up? Yes. As a matter of fact, I am. And that, more than anything else, is what this all comes down to. Me giving up on me. No matter what I've said so far, no matter who I've spoken of, it all comes back to, it all ends with me.
Her voice sounds calm, content with what she's saying.
Before that party, I'd thought about giving up so many times. I don't know. Maybe some people are just preconditioned to think about it more than others. Because every time something bad happened, I thought about it. It? Okay, I'll say it. I thought about suicide.
The anger, the blame, it's all gone. Her mind is made up. The word is not a struggle for her anymore.
After everything I've talked about on these tapes, everything that occurred, I thought about suicide. Usually it was just a passing thought. I wish I would die.
I've thought those words many times, but it's a hard thing to say out loud. It's even scarier to feel you might mean it.
But sometimes I took things further and I wondered how I would do it. I would tuck myself into bed and wonder if there was anything in the house I could use. A gun? No, we never owned one and I wouldn't know where to get one. What about hanging? Well, what would I use? Where would I do it? And even if I knew what and where, I could never get beyond the visual of someone finding me swinging inches from the floor. I couldn't do that to Mom and Dad.
So how did they find you? I've heard so many rumors.
It became a sick sort of game, imagining ways to kill myself. And there are some pretty weird and creative ways.
You took pills. That we all know. Some say you passed out and drowned in a bathtub full of water.
It came down to two lines of thinking. If I wanted people to think it was an accident, I'd drive my car off the road. Someplace where there's no chance of survival. And there are so many places to do that on the outskirts of town. I've probably driven by each of them a dozen times in the past couple weeks.
Others say you drew the bathwater, but fell asleep on your bed while it was filling,
Your mom and dad came home, found the bathroom flooded, and called your name. But there was no answer.
Then there are these tapes. Can I trust the 12 of you to keep a secret? To not let my parents find out what really happened? Will you let them believe it was an accident if that's the story going around?
She pauses.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
She thinks we might tell. She thinks we'll walk up to our friends and say, "Do you want to know a horrible secret?"
So I've decided on the least painful way possible. Pills.
My stomach pulls in, wanting to rid my body of everything. Food, thoughts, emotions.
But what kind of pills? And how many? I'm not sure. And I don't have much time to figure it out because tomorrow, I'm going to do it. Wow.
I sit down on the curb of a dark, quiet intersection.
I won't be around anymore. Tomorrow.
Most houses on the connecting four blocks give little indication that anyone is awake inside. A few windows flicker with the faint blue light of late-night TV. About a third of them have porch lights on. But for the rest, other than a cut lawn or a car out front, it's hard to tell anyone lives there at all.
Tomorrow I'm getting up, I'm getting dressed, and I'm walking to the post office. There I'll mail a bunch of tapes to Justin Foley. And after that, there's no turning back. I'll go to school, too late for first period, and we'll have one last day together. The only difference being that I'll know it's the last day. You won't.
Can I remember? Can I see her in the halls on that last day? I want to remember the very last time I saw her.
And you'll treat me how you've always treated me. Do you remember the last thing you said to me?
I don't.
The last thing you did to me?
I smiled, I'm sure of it. I smiled every time I saw you after that party, but you never looked up. Because your mind was made up. If given the chance, you knew you might smile back, and you couldn't. Not if you wanted to go through with it.
And what was the last thing I said to you? Because trust me, when I said it, I knew it was the last thing I'd ever say.
Nothing. You told me to leave the room, and that was it. You found ways to ignore me every time after that.
Which brings us to one of my very last weekends. The weekend following the accident. The weekend of a new party. A party I didn't attend. Yes, I was still grounded. But that's not the reason I didn't go. In fact, if I wanted to go, it would have been much easier than last time because I was house-sitting that weekend. A friend of my father's was out of town and I was watching his house for him. Feeding his dog and keeping an eye on things because there was supposed to be a rager a few doors down. And there was. Maybe not as big as the last party, but definitely not one for beginners.
Even if I thought you might be there, I still would have stayed home. With the way you ignored me at school, I assumed you would ignore me there too. And that was a theory too painful to prove.
I've heard people say that after a particularly bad experience with tequila, just the smell of it can make them barf. And while this party didn't make me barf, just being near it, just hearing it, twisted my stomach into knots. 1 week was nowhere near enough time to get over that last party. The dog was going crazy, yapping every time someone walked by the window. I would crouch down, yelling at him to get away from there, but was too afraid to go over and pick him up. Too afraid someone might see me and call my name. So I put the dog in the garage where he could yap all he wanted.
Wait, I remember it now. The last time I saw you.
The bass thumping down the block was impossible to shut out, but I tried. I ran through the house, closing curtains and twisting shut every blind I could find.
I remember the last words we said to each other.
Then I hid myself in the bedroom with the TV blasting, and even though I couldn't hear it, I could feel the bass pumping inside of me. I shut my eyes tight. I wasn't watching the TV anymore. I wasn't in that room anymore. I could only think back to that closet, hiding inside it with a pile of jackets surrounding me. And once again, I started rocking back and forth, and once again, no one was around to hear me cry.
In Mr. Porter's English class, I noticed your desk was empty. But when the bell rang, and I walked into the hall, there you were.
Eventually, the party died down, And after everyone walked by the window again and the dog stopped yapping, I walked through the house, reopening the curtains.
We almost bumped into each other, but your eyes were down so you didn't know it was me, and together we said it. I'm sorry.
After being shut in for so long, I decided to catch a breath of fresh air, and maybe in turn, be a hero.
Then you looked up, you saw me, and there, in your eyes, what was it? Sadness? Pain? You moved around me and tried pushing your hair away from your face. Your fingernails were painted dark blue. I watched you walk down the long stretch of hallway, with people knocking into me, but I didn't care. I stood there and watched you disappear. Forever.
Once again, everybody, D4, Courtney Crimson's house, the site of this party. No, this tape is not about Courtney, though she does play a part. But Courtney has no idea what I'm about to say, because she left just as things got going.
I turn and walk in the opposite direction of Courtney's house.
My plan was to just walk by the place. Maybe I'd find someone struggling to put a key in their car door and I'd give them a ride home.
I'm not going to Courtney's. I'm going to Eisenhower Park, the scene of Hannah's first kiss.
But the street was empty. Everyone was gone. Or so it seemed. And then someone called my name. Over the tall wooden fence at the side of her house, a head poked up. And whose head would that be? Bryce Walker's.
God, no. This can only end one way. If anyone can shovel more shit onto Hannah's life, it's Bryce.
Where are you going? He asked.
How many times had I seen him with any of his girlfriends grabbing their wrists and twisting, treating them like meat? And that was in public.
My body, my shoulders, everything was set to keep walking by the house. And I should have kept walking. But my face turned toward him. There was steam rising up from his side of the fence. Come on, join us, he said. We're sobering up. And whose head should pop up beside his? Miss Courtney Crimson's. Now there was a coincidence. She's the one who used me as a chauffeur to attend a party, and there I was crashing her after party. She's the one who left me stranded with no one to talk to, and there I was at her house where she had nowhere to hide.
That's not why you did it, Hannah. That's not why you joined them. You knew it was the worst choice possible. You knew that.
But who am I to hold a grudge?
That's why you did it. You wanted your world to collapse around you. You wanted everything to get as dark as possible. And Bryce, you knew, could help you do that.
He said you were all just relaxing a bit. Then you, Courtney, offered to give me a ride home when we were done, not realizing home was only two houses away. And you sounded so genuine, which surprised me. It even made me feel a little guilty. I was willing to forgive you, Courtney. I do forgive you. In fact, I forgive almost all of you. But you still need to hear me out. You still need to know. I walked across the wet grass and pulled a latch on the fence, popping the gate open a few inches. And behind it, the source of the steam. A redwood hot tub. The jets weren't on, so the only sound was the water lapping against the sides. Against the two of you. Your heads were back, resting on the edge of the hot tub. Your eyes were shut. And the little smiles on your faces made the water and steam look so inviting. Courtney rolled her head my way but kept her eyes shut. We're in our underwear, she said. I waited a second. Should I? No, but I will.
You knew what you were getting into, Hannah.
I took off my top, pulled off my shoes, took off my pants, and climbed the wooden steps. And then I descended into the water. It felt so relaxing, so comforting. I cupped the hot water in my hands and let it drip over my face. I pushed it back through my hair. I forced my eyes to shut, my body to slide down, and my head to rest against the ledge. But with the calming water also came terror. I should not be here. I didn't trust Courtney. I didn't trust Bryce, no matter what their original intentions. I knew them each well enough not to trust them for long. And I was right not to trust them. But I was done. I was through fighting. I opened my eyes and looked up at the night sky. Through the steam, the whole world seemed like a dream.
I narrow my eyes as I walk, wanting to shut them completely.
Before long, the water became uncomfortable. Too hot.
When I open my eyes, I want to be standing in front of the park. I don't want to see any more of the streets I walked and the streets Hannah walked the night of the party.
But when I pushed my back against the tub and sat up to cool my upper body, I could see my breasts through my wet bra. So I slid back down, and Bryce slid over. Slowly, across the underwater bench, and his shoulder rested against mine. Courtney opened her eyes, looked at us, then shut them again.
I swing a fist to the side and rattle a rusted chain-link fence. I shut my eyes and drag my fingers across the metal.
Bryce's words were soft, an obvious attempt at romance. "Hannah Baker," he said. "Everyone knows who you are, Bryce. Everyone knows what you do. But I, for the record, did nothing to stop you. You asked if I had fun at the party. Courtney whispered that I wasn't at the party, but you didn't seem to care. Instead, your fingertips touched the outside of my thigh."
I opened my eyes and pounded the fence again.
"I clenched my jaw, and your fingers moved away.
It broke up pretty fast," he said.
"And just as fast, your fingertips were back."
I hold tight to the fence and keep walking forward. When my fingers pull away from the metal, my skin slices open.
"Your whole hand was back, and when I didn't stop you, you slid your hand across my belly. Your thumb touched the bottom of my bra, and your pinky touched the top of my underwear. I turned my head sideways away from you, and I know I didn't smile. You pulled your fingers together and rubbed slow, full circles around my stomach.
'Feels nice,' you said.
I felt a shift in the water and opened my eyes for one brief second. Courtney was walking away.
"Do you need more reasons for everyone to hate you, Courtney?"
"Remember when you were a freshman?" you asked.
Your fingers made their way under my bra, but you didn't grab me. Testing the boundaries, I guess. Sliding your thumb along the underside of my breasts.
"Weren't you on that list?" you said. "Best ass in the freshman class."
Bryce, you had to see my jaw clench. You had to see my tears. Does that kind of shit turn you on?
Bryce, yes, it does.
"It's true," he said. And then, just like that, I let go. My shoulders went limp. My legs fell apart. I knew exactly what I was doing.
Not once had I given in to the reputation you'd all set for me. Not once. Even though sometimes it was hard. Even though sometimes I found myself attracted to someone who only wanted to get with me because of what they'd heard. But I always said no to those people. Always. Until Bryce.
"So, congratulations, Bryce. You're the one."
I let my reputation catch up with me. I let my reputation become me. With you.
"How does it feel?"
"Wait, don't answer that. Let me say this first. I was not attracted to you, Bryce. Ever. In fact, you disgusted me."
"And I'm gonna kick your ass, I swear it."
"You were touching me, but I was using you. I needed you so I could let go of me completely. For everyone listening, let me be clear. I did not say no or push his hand away. All I did was turn my head, clench my teeth, and fight back tears. And he saw that. He even told me to relax."
"Just relax," he said. "Everything will be okay."
As if letting him finger me was going to cure all my problems. But in the end, I never told you to get away. And you didn't. You stopped rubbing circles on my stomach. Instead, you rubbed back and forth gently along my waist. Your pinky made its way under the top of my panties and rolled back and forth from hip to hip. Then another finger slipped below, pushing your pinky further down, brushing it through my hair. And that's all you needed, Bryce. You started kissing my shoulder, my neck, sliding your fingers in and out, and then you kept going.
You didn't stop there. I'm sorry. Is this getting too graphic for some of you? Too bad. When you were done, Bryce, I got out of the hot tub and walked two houses away. The night was over. I was done.
I pressed stop. I tightened my fist and lifted in front of my face. Through my teary eyes, I watched the blood squeeze through my fingers. The skin is cut deep in a few places, torn by the rusted fence. No matter where Hannah wants me to go next, I know where I'm spending the rest of my night. But first, I need to clean my hand. The cuts sting, but I mostly feel weak from the sight of my own blood. I head for the nearest gas station. It's a couple of blocks down and not too far out of my way. I flick my hand a few times, dripping dark spots of blood onto the sidewalk. When I reach the station, I tuck my hurt hand into my pocket and pull open the glass door of the mini-mart. I find a clear bottle of rubbing alcohol and a small box of Band-Aids, drop a few bucks on the counter, and ask for a key to the restroom.
"Restrooms are around back," the woman behind the counter says.
I turn the key in the lock and push the restroom door open with my shoulder. Then I rinse my hand beneath cold water and watch the blood circle down the drain. I crack the seal on the bottle of alcohol and, in one motion because I won't do it if I think, empty the entire bottle over my hand. My whole body tenses and I curse as loud and hard as I can. It feels like my skin is peeling away from the muscle. After what seems like nearly an hour, I can finally bend and flex my fingers again. Using my free hand and my teeth, I apply some Band-Aids to my cut hand. I return the key and the woman says nothing more than,
"Have a good night."
When I reach the sidewalk, I start jogging again. There's only one tape left. A blue number 13 painted in the corner. Cassette 7, Side A. Eisenhower Park is empty. I stand silently at the entrance, taking it all in. This is where I'll spend the night, where I'll listen to the last words Hannah Baker wants to say before I let myself fall asleep. Lamp posts stand in the various play areas, but most of the bulbs are either burnt out or busted. The bottom half of the rocket slide is hidden in darkness. But near the top, where the rocket climbs higher than the swings in the trees, moonlight hits the metal bars all the way up to the peak. I step onto an area of sand surrounding the rocket. I duck beneath its bottom platform, lifted up from the ground by three large metal fins. Above me, a circle the size of a manhole is cut into the lowest level. A metal ladder descends to the sand. When I stand up, my shoulders poke through the hole. With my good hand, I grip the lip of the circle and climb to the first platform. I reach into my jacket pocket and press play.
"One last try,"
she's whispering. The recorder is close to her mouth, and with each break in her words, I can hear her breathe.
"I'm giving life one more chance, and this time, I'm getting help. I'm asking for help because I cannot do this alone. I've tried that."
"You didn't, Hannah. I was there for you and you told me to leave."
"Of course, if you're listening to this, I failed. Or he failed. And if he fails, the deal is sealed."
My throat tightens and I start climbing up the next ladder.
"Only one person stands between you and this collection of audio tapes. Mr. Porter."
"No, he cannot know about this. Hannah and I both have Mr. Porter for first period English. I see him every day. I do not want him to know about this, not about me, not about anyone. To bring an adult into this, someone from school, is beyond what I imagined."
"Mr. Porter, let's see how you do."
The sound of Velcro tearing apart. Then stuffing. She's shoving the recorder into something. A backpack? Her jacket? She knocks. And knocks again.
"Hannah, glad you made it."
The voice is muffled, but it's him. Deep, but friendly.
"Come in, sit here."
"Thank you."
Our English teacher, but also the guidance counselor for students with the last names A through G. Hannah Baker's guidance counselor.
"Are you comfortable? Do you want some water?"
"I'm fine. Thank you."
"So, Hannah, how can I help you? What would you like to talk about?"
"Well, that's
I don't know, really. Just everything, I guess.